In realms of thought, I'm known. My insights on political action shown. With banality, I shed a crucial light on evil's guise obscured from sight. A thinker bold, my name's the key. Who am I? P.S. Amor Mundi. And that was this week's E-International Relations Riddle Challenge. Stay tuned to the end of this episode for the solution. Hello and welcome to this week's Thinking Global podcast episode by E-International Relations, the world's leading open access website for students and scholars of international relations. I'm your host, my name is Kieran O'Meara, as ever, and this week I am joined by Tusharika Decker. Hi Tusharika.
Hi Kieran.
Hey T, always great to have you with us. Now, before we go anywhere, don't forget to click on that little follow or subscribe button, and that way you'll be able to get all the content that Thinking Global has to offer directly to your device. Now, today we are making Thinking Global history because Tusharika is going to be interviewing Arvind Kumar, Dr. Arvind Kumar from Royal Holloway in the University of London. Now, this week is a special week because there are actually two episodes released this week. One in English and the other in Hindi. So Tusharika is going to be continuing with the second episode of our bilingual, multilingual India Votes series. This week she's going to be talking to Arvind Kumar on the significance of these elections, who the key political figures and parties in India are, class-based minor parties, candidate selection procedure, and more. It's an absolute brilliant episode. And as I say, if you would rather listen to that interview in Hindi, you will be able to find that on the same platform you are listening to this on right now. Arvind Kumar is a lecturer in sociology and criminology at Royal Holloway, the University of London. He is also an executive member of the British Association of South Asian Studies. He just completed his PhD in politics from Royal Holloway, and his PhD thesis was on the candidate selection and voting behaviour mobilisation of marginal castes in Uttar Pradesh. He writes regularly for The Print, Idea Today, First Post, and more. So Tusharika, over to you.
Hi everyone, welcome to EIR's Thinking Global podcast. I'm your host Tusharika Decker, editor-at-large at EIR. I'm also based at the University of Nottingham. I know most of you are going to miss Kieran for this episode, but know that he's present with us in spirit. This podcast is part of the series that we are conducting on the Indian general elections 2024. In our first part, we spoke to Dr. Rahul Verma, a fellow at the Center for Policy Research, New Delhi. Dr. Verma gave our listeners a background knowledge to the Indian elections. This podcast is significant not just for our listeners today, but also for us at EIR Thinking Global podcast team. We are conducting this podcast both in Hindi and in English. Considering the large number of listeners we have in India, we decided to take this step. Hopefully, in the future, we can expand more to many other beautiful languages of the world. So today, I'm joined by Arvind Kumar. Arvind is a lecturer in sociology and criminology at the Royal Holloway, University of London. He is also the executive member, British Association for South Asian Studies, BASAS. So if anyone is interested in reaching out to BASAS, you could reach out to Arvind as well. Arvind just completed PhD in politics from Royal Holloway. His PhD thesis was on the candidate selection and voting behavior, BJP's mobilization of marginal caste in Uttar Pradesh. He writes regularly for The Print, India Today, First Post, etc. Hello, Arvind.
Hello, Tusharika.
Hi. So wonderful to have you, Arvind. So, Arvind, my first question is, Indian general election 2024, the dates are released. 19 April is when we'll see the process. Around 969 million people are going to exercise their right to vote, the largest in any part of the world. Can you provide our listeners with an overview of why this election is going to be so important?
Thanks, Tusharika, for asking this wonderful question. So, actually, Mean, before moving on your question on Indian election, actually 2014 is very interesting year because this is year when we are gonna to witness elections in several countries. Means UK is gonna to have election. In South Asia, we have already seen Pakistan and Bangladesh has gone through election, and US is also going through election. So this is term as election year. And because means it is election year, and fate of democracy, what is argued that democracies across the world, there is democratic backsliding, or there is decline of democracy, rise of authoritarian, several terminologies have been used. And this election is gonna to decide like in which direction democracies across the world going on. And since India is largest democracy, we call in very popular language largest democracy because India is second highest populated country. So we can think of like second largest population. Every 5 years they go for voting. And because of that, we are expecting that this election is gonna to be very interesting. Just for general audience, so you said that India is gonna to have election from 19th April onwards. So unlike many other countries, Indian election, like in India, voting did not happen same day. So for example, in US, UK, voting happens on same day, one in single day. But in India, like voting happen in different phases, and phases are decided by like independent election commission, which conducts election in India, unlike here in UK, where like government is largely responsible for conducting election. But in India, it is separate independent election commissions which is responsible for conducting election. And that commission, like because of previously there has been law and order situation and booth capturing, several phenomena used to get reported back in 90s. And to eliminate those malpractices, India's Election Commission has decided to conduct election in phases. And first phase of voting is gonna to happen on 19th April. And in fact, just yesterday was the last date of nomination for first phase of election, which is gonna to be on polling on 19th of April. Indian elections are very important because this is after very long period of time, like from 1989 onward, in India there used to be a coalition government. Regularly, one coalition was led by a centrist party, which is called Indian National Congress, whereas another coalition was led by a right-wing party, which is in India, Bharatiya Janata Party. But from 2014 onward, like right-wing party have formed full majority government. And not only in 2014 it first time it formed, but it won second time in 2019 with higher majority. So now this is third time we are gonna to witness whether right-wing government would be able to continue or not. So this is larger picture about Indian elections. Yeah, Tusharika.
Thank you so much, Arvind. Thank you for giving us a background to the elections. And indeed, you're right. This is the year of elections. In fact, earlier we were recording another podcast, and Karen and I, we discussed that probably over 24, 25 countries are going on election this year. So special, very special year, and interesting to know so much about it. So now I would like to move to the next question. And I understand you have a very strong knowledge about regional politics, and this is something that we haven't explored much here. So I'd really like to know, Please tell us more about regional politics in India. Why do you think it is so important? Please introduce us to some of the key political figures in India right now.
Yeah, so this is very interesting question. So in India, like before 2019, like from 1989 onward, or in post 1980, what was seen, Indian elections were largely seen an aggregate of regional elections. So it means that different, like in India, there are different provinces which are called in India the states. And at state level, there were different political parties, independent political parties, who had their limitation in that particular state or province itself. So, for example, deep south in southern part of India, we have Tamil Nadu as a state where main political party is DMK, which is called Dravida Munnetra Kழகம, and then another party which was principal opponent of that party was AIDMK, and both parties like did not have their presence in other states, but they had very strong presence in their own state, and that strong presence was meant in both elections, particularly in state elections as well as in national elections. So result of state election were more or less used to be replicated in national elections. So DMK was led by a very powerful regional leader called Karunanidhi, and now that party is led by his son M.K. Stalin. Likewise, if we go in completely northern side of India, Jammu Kashmir, and it has always remained like in discussion worldwide because of conflict with it is a one of the conflict zone state in India. So it has remained under discussion across the world. But if we see politics of Jammu Kashmir, that is also largely led by regional players, and their one party National Conference, which is led by Abdullah family, presently Umar Abdullah is leading, but it was they are descendant of former Prime Minister of Kashmir, Sheikh Abdullah. And similarly, another party there, which is PDP, which is led by Mufti Muhammad Saeed. Similarly, in Jammu, in Punjab, there is Akali Dal, which is led by Badal family, Prakash Singh Badal and Sukhbir Badal are main leaders. Sukhbir Badal is his main leader, but his father used to be very prominent leader. And if we go in other part, like other in northern Indian states, such as Uttar Pradesh, there also exist regional party and regional players. Main regional player is Samajwadi Party, and it is led by Akhilesh Yadav. Then Bahujan Samaj Party, another very important political party, which emerged in 1990s in India and changed its like political language and vocabulary. It has also very strong presence in Uttar Pradesh. It is led by Sushri Mayawati. And then in another neighboring state, for example, Bihar, we have two regional parties, and they had very strong regional base. One is Rashtriya Lok Dal, sorry, Rashtriya Janata Dal, led by Lalu Prasad Yadav and his son, and then Janata Dal United, led by Nitish Kumar. Then in West Bengal, we have a regional party which is led by Mamata Banerjee, and once again in other southern states, for example, Odisha, there is a party called Biju Janata Dal, which is led by Naveen Patnaik, and then Andhra Pradesh, we had another province where there exists a party, YSRP, it is led by YS Rajasekhar Reddy. And then another state which was earlier part of Telangana, of Andhra Pradesh, is Telangana. There now we have a Bharatiya Rashtra Samiti led by K. Chandrasekhar Rao. Likewise, so across India there exist different political parties which have very, very strong presence, both politically as well as they had like a stronger presence in terms of mobilization. They have wider appeal among different caste, religion and ethnic groups. So that makes Indian election very interesting. And often what happens, like when a political party in India try to form government or try to win election, it forms alliance with these regional parties. And presently, if you would be following Indian elections, you will frequently come across news that now there is, you know, to challenge BJP, there is International Congress Party has formed an alliance of all regional party or major regional party, which is called India Alliance, in fact, India Alliance, and it has like different political parties would be contesting under one banner called India Alliance. Similarly, BJP is also not contesting, would be contesting alone. It has also formed alliance which is called National Democratic Alliance, in which different regional parties would be part of that.
Thank you so much, Arvind, and thank you for giving us a detailed background to all the regional parties. I know it's not an easy task because there's so much of regional politics involved in so many political parties. But thank you at least for making us familiar with the major players, and quite interesting. So the next question is, and I know this is very close to your heart because you have extensively worked in the state of UP, which is also basically part of your PhD thesis. UP politics plays a major role in India's general election. Tell us a bit about the different political parties present in UP and their role in general elections.
Yeah, so UP plays very significant role in Indian politics. And in Indian politics, there is a phrase which is often used that power to Delhi goes through Lucknow. Lucknow is actually UP's capital. So primary reason behind this is that Uttar Pradesh is largest, like highest populated state or province in India, and therefore it sends highest number of electorates in its popular house, or which we call lower house or Lok Sabha it is called in India. And 80 out of like 543, 80 members get elected from Uttar Pradesh only. So it has been the case that if a party like able to win maximum number of seats in Uttar Pradesh, it's a chance to form national government actually increases up to great extent. That has been a larger the case. But what has happened, like in post-90s, not we can say from 1967 onward, earlier there used to be only Congress party which was dominant in Uttar Pradesh, but over the period there has been other parties which has emerged in Uttar Pradesh. So first parties which emerged in Uttar Pradesh was under larger agrarian and agrarian, which was led by the agrarian communities, we can say. If you want to read about little bit about rise of opposition in India, one can go through writings of political scientist Paul R. Brass, who has written Politicization of Peasantry in North India and India's first like a leader who later became prime minister and who formed government are considered to be a towering figure who has led to the emergence of opposition parties in India was Chaudhary Charan Singh. So he mobilized agrarian communities. And basically, so one kind of political parties which still exist in Uttar Pradesh, they trace their genealogy from the politics of Chaudhary Charan Singh. So two examples are prominent. So like in Uttar Pradesh, presently main opposition party vis-a-vis BJP is Samajwadi Party. And Samajwadi Party traces its genealogy from the politics of Chaudhary Charan Singh. So in Hindi, it is called Samajwadi Party, but in English, it would be called as Socialist Party. So India still have lot of parties which uses the term socialist. So in different languages, Samajwadi Party, Janata Party. So social parties still use that term, though it might be possible. There is possibility that they have embraced capitalism, but socialism word they still use. So Samajwadi Party is one principal challenger party. And then another important, most important party, as I said in my previous response, is Bahujan Samaj Party, which is largely led by, which is party of India's ex-untouchable communities, Dalit community, though it also mobilizes voters from other communities, but primarily the party claims to be protect interest of erstwhile untouchable community, Dalit community. So Bahujan Samaj Party is second party, important party. And then there are several other parties which are existing. So for example, in Western Uttar Pradesh, family of former Prime Minister Chaudhary Charan Singh, they had their own political party, which is called Rashtriya Lok Dal, Indian National Lok Dal. And it is led by his great grandson, Jayant Chaudhary, who used to be, till very recently, who was part of Congress-led opposition India Alliance, but recently he switched to the alliance, Bharatiya Janata Party-led alliance. And then there are other smaller caste-based parties such as Apna Dal, which is led by Anupriya Patel, and then several parties have emerged among erstwhile like politically marginalized communities such as Rajbhar community, which is a party which has emerged called Suheldev Rajbhar party, and then Nisad party, which is party of fishermen community. So likewise, there are several parties, and of course, two important, most important player of India, Indian politics is Bharatiya Janata Party and Indian National Congress. So BJP has very strong presence, whereas with the emergence of different regional and sub-regional parties, presence of Congress has declined up to great extent in Uttar Pradesh. So that is what I can say about Uttar Pradesh society.
Welcome to this Thinking Global podcast episode's intermission. Now, if you listen to our episodes a lot, first of all, we salute you. Thank you for listening. But secondly, you'll know that this is one of my favourite times because I get to read out some of your letters. And normally this is where we do the open letter competition now. So, we have a new open letter competition up. So the question is, how would the re-election of Donald Trump to the presidency affect US foreign policy? Our favourite entry will be read out on next week's podcast episode. Just email your answers to thinkingglobal.eir@gmail.com. And we do have a 300-word max limit on that, so please no more than 300 words. So how would the re-election of Donald Trump to the presidency affect US foreign policy? We also love just receiving your letters, hearing about what you've been writing on, what you've been reading on EIR, what conferences you've been going to, what you've been publishing on. Just let us know what you've been doing and we'll read that letter out for you. So yeah, send us a letter to the same email, thinkingglobal.eir@gmail.com. Or if you have any suggestions, we'd love to hear from you as well. So yes, we'd love to hear from you. Alongside that, at eInternational Relations, you can find more of our content on social media, on X, formerly Twitter, will always be formerly Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and TikTok, and please, please connect. We want to hear from you, as I say. And do remember that at eInternational Relations, all the content that you enjoy is brought to you by a team of volunteers. So if you enjoy our output, please consider a donation. There will be a link in the description box. Now, back to Tasharika and Ervind.
Thank you so much, Arvind. That is very, very insightful indeed. And sometimes I amaze how interesting election and party politics can be. I mean, forgive me, my understanding is a little limited because I am from IR. I do a lot of international relations. And I've always amazed at the way the Indian politics works. And it's interesting that you mentioned that how somebody moved from one political party to another political party. And we do not see that often, right, internationally, but only in Indian politics, we see that people kind of move around different political parties, which is very, very interesting indeed. And also good that you mentioned about Paul Brass. I'm writing something at this moment and I'm using his theory in order to kind of bring in the instrumentalist perspective here. So thank you for pointing that. Now, moving on to the next question. In an election, caste plays an important role. We often talk about. Explain to us its significance and increasing role of caste-based minor parties.
Yeah, so in any country, we assume that social structure, like India's social structure, is essentially defined by the caste and caste-based social relations. So we assume that scholars who have worked on Indian politics thoroughly, like there are several studies which have been done, such as those who might be interested, they can go through like classical writings, which we call, which is Rudolph, and then Rajni Kothari, then coming to Paul R. Brass, and then Yogendra Yadav, Subhash Palsikar, Rahul Verma, and several others. Like even I also work on those areas. So what we see, one way of looking Indian politics is looking into what one can look into what are the changes which are happening in the caste or caste based relations, and if there are changes in caste and caste based relation, we should expect similar change in elections and democracy, or we can think similar changes in electoral politics. And previously, like if we see how caste has played a very important role in Indian politics, we should say, like, largely there are, just for understanding, there are Indian castes can be defined in largely four categories, which are upper caste, which is priestly class, Brahmins, and then warrior caste, Kshatriyas, and then agrarian caste, which is called backward caste in India, and then untouchable caste are the least, and finally tribals are outside of this sphere. So Indian politics was largely seen during first two decades. It was mainly dominated by India's upper caste social elites, where they tried to mobilize marginal castes or lower caste through different means. And then thereafter, like 1967 onward, it is seen as caste like those which were at the middle level. They started like forming alliance with the castes which were socially similarly situated, we can say, and it resulted into like emergence of opposition politics in India. And then came mobilization of tribal communities and Dalit communities in 1990s onward. And it resulted into emergence of Bahujan Samaj Party, which is and Jharkhand Mukti Morcha, as well as also formation of different states, enactment of Panchayati Raj institutions, local governments for securing, like for providing a larger representation to different these communities, which basically gradually got politicized. Now, what we see in present time, on the one hand, we see there is Bharatiya Janata Party, which has been able to successfully mobilize different castes. And several scholars have argued that party have been able to mobilize different castes which have mutual antagonistic interests, are which are in conflicting position with each other, by using a communal card, which is Hindu-Muslim divide. That's one sort of explanations which scholars have given, but there are also counterfactual counter explanation, which say that party has transformed itself. It has promoted leaders from backward castes, agrarian castes, and the Dalit communities. So, for example, presently, BJP, although it is ruling, but India's like president, he comes from tribal community, and then prime minister, he himself comes from backward castes, and then vice president comes from agrarian community. So, like top three constitutional positions in India are headed by not upper caste but also from like agrarian and lower caste. So if we see from those perspective, that's another area which has emerged, that how like right-wing parties have been in India has been able to mobilize voters from or has been formed a coalition of different castes which have diversified or conflicting mutual interest. Now, there is one more phenomena which is simultaneously we are witnessing, is the emergence of minor parties, and those are essentially caste-based parties. So, for example, in Uttar Pradesh, I named like Suhel Dev Raj Bhar Bharatiya Samaj Party, which is of political parties of mainly Rajbhar communities, which is one of the politically, I can say, disenfranchised communities, so are disenfranchised castes, because it could not get the amount of representation and social recognition which that caste wanted. But now different caste, smaller in terms of numerically smaller caste and politically disenfranchised caste, they have been in last like 20 or 15 years, they have been able to form their own caste-based party. So Suhedev Rajgar party is one such party. Similarly, Nisad party is another party. Mahan Dal, there exists Mahan Dal, and numerous smaller minor caste-based parties, now they are existing in Uttar Pradesh. And scholars have seen these phenomena. It can be seen as larger democratization and fulfilling of political aspirations of communities, or increasing reliance, increasing their trust in democracy, but also like scholar on democracy such as Professor Simon Hicks, he has seen the rise of several parties as a sign of fragmentation of democracy. So from comparative perspective, Indian system gives a completely different perspective or contrasting perspective. That is particularly rise of these minor caste-based parties. What I see, it is basically increasing faith in the government and becoming larger part of ruling system. And because of role of the caste and their strong association with their leaders, who also essentially comes from same caste as well as party, what we see in India, Sarika, you were asking, like, in India we see frequent switch of alliance of leaders and political parties. That is because of this, because like voters, largely we can say they follow their leaders, which are caste-based leaders, and if those leaders shift the alliance, voters also shift the alliance. So in Indian elections, because of this reason, one may see there is very frequent, very intense contestation or struggle for formation of alliance before every election. And that is going on in India right now. So that's all, Tusharika, I wanted to say.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Arvind. And so this is quite interesting, and there's a lot to kind of unpack here. And I'm sure our listeners would benefit a lot. So coming to this next question, and this is important because this is part of your PhD thesis also. You have worked about the candidate selection for elections for the BJP, Congress, BSP and the SP. Would you be able to explain our listeners about the process of selection? How are those decisions made by different parties? I know there's a lot to kind of cover here, and then you've written an entire thesis on it, and I know it's not possible to talk a lot, but if you can briefly explain us a bit.
Yeah, so in India, I have worked on candidate selection, and in candidate selection in India, it plays very, there are formal rules as well as there are informal rules. And I have tried to explore what are the formal rules, what are the changes which are coming in candidate selection process. Largely in Western democracy, we see which countries which follows first past post election system. Here we see there are primaries at local constituency level, and supporter of political parties, they decide who will be the candidate. But in India, that is not the case, actually. There are multiple players. Candidates are selected, shortlisted, and finally nominated at multiple stages. So, for example, in case of Indian elections, candidates get first political parties try to their office at the district level, it try to shortlist 5-10 candidates. So that is the case with major parties like BJP and others. So they try to shortlist the candidate, and then those name of those candidates get sent to the party office at state level, and then state level party office eliminates a few names and then sends those names to national office, and then national office actually finally takes a call, okay, who would be the candidate among three shortlisted candidates. That's the case with Bharatiya Janata Party. This is standard procedure which party follows. Whereas in Congress Party, it is slightly different. So in Congress Party, candidate nomination, like shortlisting, happens at state level itself. So those who have to contest election, they approach state office bearers and give their candidacy to state office, and then state office shortlist name for the candidates, and then send back to national office, and then finally national office takes a call that okay, who would be the candidate. In BSP and Samajwadi Party, because they are primarily based in Uttar Pradesh itself, so their top level leadership sits in Uttar Pradesh, and they decide candidates like after meeting with leaders from each constituency. They take call that who would be the candidate. So unlike Western democracy, in India we see very strong influence or strong say of a single leader in finalization of candidate. So that's one trend we largely see in Indian democracy, which is not like the case in Western democracy, where like party a range of leaders decide who would be the candidate, and along with that local constituency party office bearers and those who are member of the party, they decide who would be the candidate. But that's not the case in India, and we hope like if Indian democracy has to go much more deeper, this is one area where I see in upcoming future, like deepening of democracy in India requires a larger say of local community and local office bearers in candidates.
Thank you so much, Arvind, for that excellent answer. I am sure a lot of people will benefit from this. Now we've come to the end of our podcast. But before going, there's one question that we ask our every guest. What does it to think globally mean to you?
Yeah, so when I think the term globally means I essentially think it in terms of interconnectedness and interdependency of one community or one country with another country. That is largely what I think globally, with the term globally. But when we see Indian tradition, there is also a sense of global, because like since very ancient time, we can see there are strong evidences of Indian civilization having a strong connection with the known world at that time. For example, during the time of Buddhism, there used to be university, Nalanda University, where people from China and other part of the country, they used to come and study there. get the knowledge system. So there is little bit what I would say Indian perspective on global, which could be like sharing the knowledge or resources which you have with other part of the world, and taking care of every community and society. So that's what I think with term globally, Tusharika.
Thank you so much, Arvind. This is excellent. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you at the podcast. Thank you for sharing your ideas, thoughts, and your great knowledge with us. Thank you. And to our listeners, this is from my side, but do not miss listening to our Hindi recording coming up next. Thank you, Arvind.
Thank you, Tusharika, for inviting me and giving wonderful introduction to audience.
Wow, what a treat. I have to say, Arvind was just so fascinating to listen to. There's so much about Indian elections that I know absolutely nothing about. And so, yeah, I can't wait to listen to more of Tusharika's India's Votes series. And there will be more in the coming weeks and months. Thank you so much, Tusharika. Thank you so much, Arvind. Now, before we go anywhere, I would like to say a massive, massive thank you to the Thinking Global podcast team. That is Victoria H. Bergstrom, Edward Curry, Catherine Demeron, Jennifer Engel, Nigel Huckle, Daniel McDade, Eduardo Pieroni, and Romanos Orfeus Toffis. You guys are something else. I am the luckiest podcast editor and director of a publication ever, because I get to work with you guys all day, every day. Thank you so, so much. And music was by Material Music. I'd also like to say a massive thank you to Tusharika, who should get absolute full credit in every single way for the idea of the India's Vote series and the shift in language whilst having two languages at once. So absolutely amazing initiative. Absolutely brilliant. Thank you so, so much for bringing this to us, Tusharika. Okay, so before we go to the e-International Relations Riddle Challenge and we crown the person with the shout-out, I'd just like to remind you all that at e-International Relations, we are a not-for-profit organisation, and as such, we are all volunteers. If you enjoy the output of Thinking Global, please consider a donation. Also, go check out the website at e-ir.info. There you'll be able to find just loads and loads of content about international relations, from daily new articles to book reviews, more interviews, and free books, people. Yes, free books. And of course, student essays as well. So go and get yourself down to international relations at e-ir.info. And don't forget to check us out on social media, on X, formerly Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, TikTok, and Instagram. And lastly, click on that little like, share, subscribe, or follow button. It would mean the world to us, and it just means you don't have to go searching for us every week, as you obviously do. So yeah, okay, it is time for the solution to this week's e-International Relations Riddle Challenge. In realms of thought I'm known, my insights on political action shown. With banality I shed a crucial light on evil's guise obscured from sight. A thinker bold, my name's the key. Who am I? P.S. Amor Mundi. And the correct answer was, yes, indeed, the political theorist Hannah Arendt. Well done if you got that correct. Well, really well done if you got that correct. That was a good one, actually. And this week's shout-out goes to the person who got this first in less than 1 minute 30, and that is Ajmal Rasani from Pakistan. Well done, Ajmal. You got it, buddy. You were quick on the draw, and you got it quicker than anybody else in the world. Congratulations, man. Well done. And well done if you got it right at home. And don't forget to stay tuned for the next riddle challenge coming to a social media platform near you in the coming days. Okay, so there's nothing left to say apart from, I've been Kieran O'Meara.
I'm Tusharika Dekar.
And together we've been Thinking Global.